Contact. Iron Gate, Timeline 3, August 2020.
I am placing thee under arrest by authority of the Commonwealth Guard. Slowly turn, now.
Rita did as she was told, turned, raised her hands, braced against the wall in front of her. Please let him take the gun away, she prayed. Her life logger was keyed to a single word, bug out. All she needed was a second.
I said raise your hands and lean in. Do it now. Kneel. Shit.
Rita slowly lowered herself to her knees.
Over here,
her captor shouted, deafening in the confined space. The cold gun barrel at the back of her head wobbled slightly but didn't withdraw. A handcuff locked around her left wrist.
Wrists together.
The gun barrel ground painfully into her hair. The other cuff closed. The one on the left covered the E-ink tattoo. Her initial terror was subsiding into an adrenaline spike and a sense of gnawing apprehension. They're cops. They were obviously on some kind of sweep. What happens next? She had a feeling that jaunting was going to be easier said than done. The gun muzzle withdrew, but before she could react, someone yanked a canvas sack down over her head. Panicking anew, Rita tensed and reared up. They kicked her in the ribs, slamming her face into the wall. For a while, she lost track of everything but the pain in her face and the difficulty of breathing. Shattered fragments of memory captured unpleasant sensations. Being lifted and slung hard into the back of a vehicle, motion bouncing, and alarm bells ringing insistently above and behind her. Being lifted again and dragged through doorways and along corridors. The sack coming off her head in time for the final drop face down onto a fetid, lumpy mattress that smelled of piss and terror. By the time the cell door opened again, Rita had regained a tiny measure of control. Her head was sore, her ribs ached badly, and she felt nauseous, but she could think and assess her situation. They'd left her bound hand and foot. With the key generator behind her back, she couldn't jaunt. She was alone in a graffitied jail cell, the walls white and covered in tiles. The only furniture was the filthy mattress she lay on. The door looked to be made of sturdy wood bound in riveted strips of iron. A spy hole completed the dismal ensemble. I'm fucked, Rita realized. For the short term, anyway. But they'd have to take the manacles off sooner or later, wouldn't they? And when they did, she'd be ready. She rolled sideways, trying to work out if everything was still in place. They'd taken her hat, but the inertial mapper was in a concealed pocket. No, the inertial mapper was not in its concealed pocket. Shit and more shit. Alien technology would definitely flag her as an illegal. She shivered, flushing hot and cold. She could already see the colonel shaking his head in pained disappointment. It was odd, she realized, how much this job had come to mean to her in so short a time. They somehow caught me, she realized, unsure whether she meant the police here or the DHS, who had somehow managed to make her give a shit about the job, just in time for it to go horribly wrong. She was still exploring this unwelcome new realization when the door opened.
Up with you.
Hands gripped her armpits and heaved painfully.
Open your mouth. I said open it, woman.
A meaty hand clutching a cotton swab on a stick appeared in front of her face. Rita opened her mouth hastily. The prospect of another beating or worse terrified her. The swab stabbed at her tongue, twirled nauseatingly, and withdrew just as she began to retch. The hands supporting her let go and she flopped down on the mattress. She heard rattling and clicking behind her and tried to turn her head, but the door slammed shut before she got an impression of anything other than navy blue uniforms and odd-shaped hats. It was cold in the cell, and they left her alone for nearly an hour. She was shivering and uneasily wondering if she was going to piss herself when the door opened again.
"Get those leg irons off her!"
The speaker was outside the door beyond her field of vision, but the voice belonged to a woman, and her tone of authority brooked no argument. Men in uniform moved in and tugged at Rita's legs.
"You're not going to do anything stupid, are you?"
the woman asked her. It was a thinly veiled threat.
"These nice gentlemen are going to pick you up now. If you don't fight, they won't hurt you. Then we can have a little chat."
Her accent was half familiar, half strange.
"Who?"
Rita cleared her throat and licked her lips.
"Who are you?" "I'm asking the questions. Boys, lift her."
Two uniformed men, cops or jailhouse guards, Rita couldn't tell, raised her by her arms. After a second or two, she managed to steady herself and turned to face the doorway. The woman was blonde, in her 30s, and wore minimal or no makeup. Perhaps it wasn't a thing here. Her hair curled around her shoulders, and she wore some kind of uniform, unfamiliar and strange. She held a leather attaché case or folio in one hand.
"Bring her," she told Rita's guards, then turned and walked away.
They nudged her along. After a moment, she stumbled into motion, feet numb and head still sore and dizzy. Rita caught more impressions of the jail as they marched her through whitewashed corridors with scuffed wooden floors. The overhead illumination came from long glowing tubes. Old-style fluorescent lights, Rita realized. Not LED strips. She hadn't seen tube lights in years. They were banned back home. Something to do with mercury. They came to a metal elevator. The guards crowded her inside, almost nose-to-nose with her would-be interrogator. The woman smelled faintly of rose water and sweat. She spared Rita a dry smile as she pushed a button printed with the digit 8.
"I'd take you higher if we had any extra floors," she said almost apologetically as the elevator began to rise.
Rita swallowed. She had a sinking sense in her stomach, an intuition that the woman wasn't doing this at random. She knew Rita could jaunt. Jaunting at ground level would have been safe. Jaunting from the 8th floor was another matter. The guards hurried her along another corridor, with windows on one side looking out across an unfamiliar cityscape. Then she found herself inside a barely furnished room with a table and 3 wooden chairs. The table was bare but for a telephone out of an old movie, a box with pigtail wires and a rotary dial. One of the guards stood close behind her while the other closed the door.
"Constable, please remove the cuffs."
A tugging on her arms as the guard unlocked her wrists.
"Have a seat," said the woman.
Rita sat, apprehensive.
"We've got a lot to talk about."
Her interrogator unzipped the folio and removed a sheath of odd-sized documents.
"At ease, Jeremiah. Bill, I'm sure our guest would appreciate a cup of coffee."
She raised an unplucked eyebrow. Rita nodded.
"Do you take it with milk or sugar?"
"Milk," Rita said reluctantly, then berated herself. "I'm already giving information to the enemy."
"I'm Inspector Alice Morgan," said the woman. "And in case you hadn't guessed, this is the district headquarters of the Commonwealth Transport Police."
She didn't smile.
"I have a few questions for you. Starting with, what is your name and what exactly were you doing in the Iron Gate South Satellite Switchyard at 4 o'clock in the morning last Friday?"
She reached into her folio and removed a small black sphere, then placed it on the table. Rita swallowed, her mouth abruptly dry. It was one of her webcams.
"Before you try to bluff, we found your fingerprints all over this device. Trespassing is one thing, but spying on an armaments factory is something else again. If I were you, I'd think very carefully before telling me any lies. We are willing to be lenient if you cooperate fully. So, which agency of the United States government do you work for?" Iron Gate Central Police Station. Timeline 3. August 2020. The time Rita had spent in the FBI leadership course hadn't been completely wasted. It had given her some insight into how high-flying cops thought. Now, sitting opposite Inspector Morgan in an interrogation room on the upper floor of a police station, she couldn't fool herself. I am so screwed. In theory, she knew she should give the appearance of cooperation while keeping her mouth shut and waiting for an opportunity to escape. But Inspector Morgan showed every sign of being one step ahead of her all the way. Commonwealth Transport Police. Did that mean she was in charge of fining fare dodgers? Or was it an anti-terrorism role, like the investigative arm of the TSA? Guess right, Rita, she told herself uneasily. She won't give you a second chance. What's that? Rita said brightly, and pointed at the webcam. I was hoping you could tell me. The inspector's expression was mild. What's your name again? Rita. There's a fine line between disclosing operational intelligence and building rapport, her trainers had told her. Building rapport was good. It looked like cooperation, and evidence of cooperation reduced the probability of beatings. The door behind her opened, and a flimsy aluminum tray landed on the desk. There were two oddly bulbous mugs of coffee on top of it. Ceramic mugs, she saw. Odd. Take your coffee, said the inspector. Rita who? Rita Douglas? Rita took the indicated mug, and the cop who'd brought the tray removed it. Thoughts piled up in a train wreck as she raised her mug and took a preliminary sip. It was coffee, all right. So they're going to good cop me first, huh? It beat sleep deprivation or waterboarding any day of the week, but was no less an interrogation tactic. For one thing, it helped build rapport, loosening the tongue. And when the coffee got to her bladder, a skilled interrogator could use the liminal leg-crossing unease to speed her along for a few minutes, then trade it in for more sympathy by allowing her a toilet trip. Well, Miss Douglas, Inspector Morgan leaned toward her. You're a very lucky woman. Unlike the driver of streetcar 411 on the number 18 circuit, who I gather has been signed off sick for the rest of the week from the shock of nearly running you over. Shit. Oops. I'll take that as a non-denial, Morgan said dryly. The driver also testified that you were there 1 second, then vanished the next, which, along with the gadgets found on your person and the spy devices you distributed around the switchyard, tell us exactly what kind of person you are. Rita took a mouthful of coffee, desperately trying to buy a few seconds to get a handle on a situation that seemed to be spinning out of control. What kind of person would that be? She asked. The inspector's expression froze for a split second. An evasive one. I suggest you start answering my questions, Miss Douglas. We know you are a world walker sent by the United States government, and now that we've caught you, we know how to keep you. All we have to do to neutralize your ability is keep you on an upper floor, or in a basement, or blindfolded. The question then becomes one of whether you cooperate willingly or whether we have to do this the hard way. Morgan took a mouthful of coffee. The hard way is easier for us, you know. We just do it by the book. Charge you with espionage, try you, lock you up and throw away the key. Case closed. If you really want to spend the rest of your life chained to the wall of a cellar, we can make it happen. Rita dry swallowed. Her tongue felt like parchment, and her heart was pounding. To stop her hands from shaking visibly, she wrapped them around the coffee mug. What's the alternative?
You answer my bloody questions!
Inspector Morgan leaned across the table toward her, voice strident. Rita recoiled against the back of her chair. Morgan settled back, her tone moderating. I don't care how you justify it to yourself. I don't care if you tell yourself you're worming your way into my confidence to gather intelligence before you escape and report home. Your motives are immaterial. All that matters is that you answer enough of my questions that I can tell my superintendent that you are in a cooperative frame of mind." She paused. "Do you want a minute or two to make your mind up?" Rita knew enough to translate from cop speak. "There's no pressure. This isn't a boiler room operation. I just want you to do as I say right now." But although she felt a mulish urge to throw it back in Morgan's face, the inspector really did hold all the cards. Unless Rita was willing to worldwalk from the top floor, her only options were the ones Morgan was offering her. Life in a hole, or full cooperation, whatever that meant. "Ask away," she said hoarsely, wondering if she'd be able to live with this numbness afterward. "What do you want to know?" The inspector stared at her with unreadable eyes. "Let's start with, which agency do you work for, and when are they expecting you to report back next?" Philadelphia. Timeline 2. August 2020. Federal Employee 00493031, Classified Voice Transcript. Agent O'Neill.
"So, our asset is now past her deadline. Gentlemen, ma'am, do we have any comments?"
Liaison, State Department.
"Colonel, is there any prospect, in your opinion, that she's defected?"
Colonel Smith.
"What? No, absolutely none whatsoever. If you'd asked me 3 months ago, I'd have said it was a low probability outcome, but since then she's seen the gate and acquired a partner. She's solid, in my view."
Liaison, State Department.
"So she's either dead or captured?"
Colonel Smith, slowly.
"Those are the likeliest reasons, yes."
Dr. Scranton.
"Have we had any signals since insertion? What about the switchyard?"
Agent O'Neill.
"According to these transcripts, the last pop-up drone got nothing. It looks like they went through the rail yard with a fine-toothed comb. Nothing answers when we ping it. All the relay nodes are unresponsive. Air Force sent another pop-up over the downtown station, but it got nothing from Rita's inertial mapper or the bug in her left shoe. They'd have had to get lucky to find her, but it's still worrying. The silence, I mean."
Dr. Scranton. "What else are we seeing over there?"
Agent O'Neill. "The drone we had overhead when we inserted Rita picked up her beacon in the central station. A few seconds later, it disappeared and reappeared just outside the building. It's possible something inside spooked her, but not enough to abort the mission. Since then, we've had zip. The 5-minute restriction on how long we can leave a drone in the air over there means we have huge holes in our coverage. Rita disappeared in the middle of a 90-minute blackout with no assets in place to track her."
Colonel Smith.
"I'd like to draw your attention to the ground activity around the station at that time, and in the downtown area in general. Lots of cars, lots of people on foot. Too many for 6 a.m. She could have walked straight into a dragnet."
Agent O'Neill.
"What kind of dragnet could stop her jaunting?"
Dr. Scranton.
"There is a very unpleasant case that I'd like you to consider. We know that this Commonwealth entity has extensive technological capabilities. Maybe they're not up to our level, but they're advanced enough to be extremely dangerous. We also know that they're one topological shift away from Timeline 2, where we made hard contact with Clan Worldwalkers."
Liaison, State Department.
"Oh, no, please don't..." Colonel Smith. "No interruptions, please. Ma'am, if you'd continue..."
Dr. Scranton.
"Thank you. Our threat posture for the past 17 years has been based on the assumption that although we whacked the Klan hard, we had no conclusive proof that we got them all. And we've had indications of anomalous false positives in the national surveillance infrastructure that might be caused by visiting Worldwalkers. Not to mention recent evidence of a Worldwalker-assisted espionage operation in a major city. So the precautionary principle dictated that we conduct operations as if they were out there. Hence Rita. Hence Dragon's Teeth. And hence a bunch of other contingency plans you don't need to know about."
I think we have to assume that the clan, or other world walkers, are definitely known to the Commonwealth, and that the authorities there know exactly what they're looking at when they see signs of world walking. Just like us, in other words. The worst-case scenario is that the surviving world walkers from the clan are working for the Commonwealth. By repeatedly trialing a jaunt blue asset at the same location, we inadvertently alerted them to the presence of a world walker, and they saturated the area with bodies who knew what to expect. We've gotten inexcusably sloppy. We need to relearn all the tradecraft we've forgotten since the Berlin Wall came down. And unless Rita shows up in the next couple of days, we must assume the worst. That she's been captured and is being interrogated by people who know what she is. At which point I've got to have a revised plan ready for briefing that takes into account, Colonel. Colonel Smith.
There's a worse-than-worst-case scenario, I'm afraid.
Dr. Scranton. What? Colonel Smith.
You asked what if world walkers from the clan are working for the Commonwealth. But turn it on its head. What if they've got Rita and know everything she knows, and the Commonwealth are working for the clan?
End transcript. Iron Gate Central Police Station. Timeline 3. August 2020. Even though Rita was cooperating fully with the inspector's line of questioning, it was clear that her answers weren't satisfactory. After a couple of hours, Inspector Morgan called a toilet break, but Rita's respite was short-lived. The inspector grilled her until late in the evening, then consigned her to a top-floor cell. She spent a bad night on a hard bunk, trying not to notice the periodic rattling of the inspection hatch. The next morning, everything started up again.
So, let me see if I have this straight. You are Rita Douglas, age 26. Previous occupation, thespian.
The inspector's language was weird. English, but with enough variant usage thrown in to suggest centuries of divergent evolution.
You were inducted by an autonomous group within the Department of Homeland Security in the wake of a kidnapping attempt by your long-lost world-walking relatives. The unit is headed by a Colonel Smith who reports to a Dr. Scranton.
She paused.
What is a medical practitioner doing in this unit, Rita? Do you have an explanation?
I don't think she's an MD. Nobody told me what her doctorate was in.
Yet she uses the honorific.
That's not uncommon for people with higher degrees, is it?
I see.
Inspector Morgan frowned, then stared at her with narrowed eyes, as if trying to recall the precise offense that applied. Forget it. Morgan's lips thinned as she added another note to the book before her. The pen she used seemed to be a ballpoint of some kind, Rita saw, but everything here was a subtly different shape.
Back to the kidnapping. When and where exactly did it happen? Do you remember the date and time? I'd like you to walk me through it in detail.
Yeah. It was March the 21st, a Friday evening in Boston. I'd just flown back from Seattle.
Seattle?
Is that a city?
Where is it?
Oh, God. It's on the West Coast? Between Vancouver and Portland?
How do you spell Vancouver? Is that another city?
Yes. Rita spelled it, then spelled Seattle. It's on Puget Sound, a deep bay way up the coast near the border with Canada.
Canada? What is Canada?
A 5-minute detour taxed Rita's knowledge of 18th century history to the utmost before the inspector caught herself.
Let us pass over this for a while. It is of low significance. You were on the West Coast, and you flew to the East Coast.
The inspector sounded skeptical, as if flying was something too exotic to associate with the woman before her.
What happened then?
Oh, I caught the commuter train to the garage where I'd left my car. It was about 11 o'clock at night when I got there, and the place was nearly deserted. So I paid my parking ticket and went to my car when some guy tased me.
Tased?
A taser is, an electric dart gun. Hurts like a snake bite.
Worse.
It paralyzed me and I fell over and two men picked me up and rolled me into the trunk of my car. And
a trunk is a baggage compartment, isn't it?
A buzzer sounded from deep in the guts of the odd-looking desk telephone, rescuing Rita from a hellish spiral of ever-converging footnotes that served only to make her dizzy and irritable, highlighting the conceptual gulf separating this world from her own.
Morgan here? Yes?
Inspector Morgan picked up the headset and listened attentively. Rita tried to overhear, but the speaker wasn't very loud.
Yes, I'm in the process of... No, you can't. I've already charged her and am interviewing the accused.
Rita sat bolt upright at that.
Charged? She thought. But she hasn't. She's in transport police custody. No, you can't. This is a matter for the police. You clearly have no standing in this case, and I will thank you for not interfering in an ongoing police investigation. Good day.
She slapped the handset down with sufficient venom to rattle the table. Rita cleared her throat.
I couldn't help overhearing. You told whoever that was that you'd charged me. Are you supposed to read me my rights or let me ask for a lawyer or something?
For a moment, the inspector looked as if she was about to explode. She took a deep breath and shook her head. Then she looked Rita in the eye.
You didn't hear that conversation. You must have imagined it.
I don't understand. Because if I had not in fact charged you already, I would have been lying when I told the specials to piss up a rope. Morgan looked past Rita's shoulder.
Jerry, I do not believe our guest here has made the delightful acquaintance of the special counter-espionage police.
The cop behind her shuffled nervously.
No, ma'am.
The inspector flashed him a toothy, indefinably uneasy smile. Then she turned back to Rita and explained. The specials are not a real police force. They're a branch of the inner party apparatus. Politicals. The Commonwealth Transport Police is a national organization working for the people. Our hands are bound by the law and the constitution of the Commonwealth. The SCEP men are not so constrained. Constable Jeremiah cleared his throat pointedly.
Yes, well, Morgan said briskly. Miss Douglas, by the authority vested in me as an inspector of constabulary in this force, I am officially charging you with trespassing on the permanent way within the meaning of Section 49 of the Public Transportation Regulation Act. I also intend to charge you with 8 counts of littering, to wit, leaving objects all over the southern switchyard, and, of being present on the platform of Central Station without a valid ticket. Witnessed, Jerry, as of an hour ago?
Oh, good, Rita said weakly.
You do not need to say anything. The charges mean that I can now hold you for up to a week for questioning. More importantly, they mean that Mr. Pierrepoint can't get his hands on you without first obtaining a bench warrant, which he will no doubt hasten to do, but because I have both you and the evidence he would need to bring charges of treason and spying against you, we have a few hours of breathing space in which to prepare my report and get it in front of the right people.
Who are...
The people who want to negotiate with your bosses before they do anything stupid, Miss Douglas.
Iron Gate Central Police Station. Timeline 3. August 2020. Meanwhile, 10 floors down, the sergeant on the station front desk was having a bad morning.
Please tell Commander Jackson that Olga Thorold is here to see him, the woman in the wheelchair repeated firmly. This time she added, immediately.
The sergeant, flustered, stared over her head.
The commander is very busy.
If I don't see him within the next 5 minutes, he will be even busier, boy.
The cop looked to be only a few years younger than Olga herself, but she was determined not to let him regain authority in this situation.
I'm here on official business of the Department of Parahistorical Research. Call the commander's office at once. It's urgent.
The word urgent seemed to galvanize the man. Or perhaps it was the way Olga's attendant shifted his balance. She hated the wheelchair, but it gave her an excuse for bringing a bodyguard into places where bodyguards caused raised eyebrows, such as police stations and military bases. Jack wasn't in uniform, but his posture bespoke his background, and the desk sergeant finally made the connection.
Who did you say you were, madam?
Olga Thorold, from the Department of Parahistorical Research.
A thumb over her shoulder.
He's with me, Commonwealth Guard Security Section. Show him your warrant card, Jack.
Jack flipped a card wallet open and held it before the desk. The sergeant swallowed, then picked up his telephone receiver and dialed, hastily.
Front desk. Visitor asking for Commander Jackson's office. A Mrs. Thorold. Yes, sir. Right away.
He stared at her as if she'd grown a second head.
You're to go right on up. Sorry about this. Nobody said you was expected, and you're not on the list.
But Jack had already backed up and set Olga's chair rolling toward the elevator in the corridor beyond the front desk. She clung to the armrests.
I hope I'm in time, she told herself.
Her office had received the eye-opening transcript of Inspector Morgan's first day with the suspect late enough that Olga had been asleep when the phone jangled, pulling her straight into crisis mode. The arrest of a world walker from the United States would have been sufficient to trigger a political earthquake on its own, even without the horrifying questions hanging over the identity of the spy in question. What little hope she had that the intruder was merely a common or garden-variety spy dwindled with every update. She arrived on the fourth floor to discover the local force command suite in a state of turmoil. Majors and inspectors rushing around urgently, stenographers clacking away at their computer terminals and telex machines, a steady stream of messengers coming and going.
"Where's Commander Jackson?"
Olga demanded at the door.
"You can't see him," the callow young man on reception began. "He's in a briefing."
"Aha! Miss Thorold!"
The commander bounced out of a boardroom door and came to rest in front of her, positively vibrating.
"Excellent! We've been waiting for you."
"About time," she muttered under her breath, as Jack wheeled her into the conference room. "What do we know, Richard?"
Heads turned as she entered the room. Commander Jackson closed the door behind her, and a captain hastily cleared a space at the table for her chair.
"Inspector Alice Morgan is with the subject right now, resuming the interview. They're on the top floor. She's keeping it low-key and friendly for the time being. The subject has been cooperative so far. The only problem is there's obviously been some sort of leak."
"Who was the recipient?"
Olga demanded.
"The General Secretary's office. Mr. Pierpoint's deputy called the interview room on the direct line about an hour ago, demanding we hand the subject over. Whoever blabbed told them exactly what extension to call and who to ask for, so I'm treating it as a hostile security breach and will be hunting the leaker in due course. Inspector Morgan told them to come back with a warrant, but it's anybody's guess how long we've got."
Olga cut him off.
"They've got tame judges. We've got to get her out of here right now. You don't want to get caught up in a fight between the party secretariat and the DPR.
But a transfer of jurisdiction. Do you agree that this is a matter of national security?"
Commander Jackson met her gaze for a second,
then nodded abruptly. The DPR is best placed to handle a debriefing and work out how to respond. If it's a matter of whatever charges you're detaining her on, I'm sure we can arrange to settle them, or bring her in front of a sheriff's court in due course. But it would be a really bad idea to let Mr. Pierpoint take custody of the prisoner, in view of the current, political situation.
Oh, hell.
Jackson rubbed his eyes.
This is about the succession, isn't it?
I hope not, but the timing is a terrible coincidence. Olga took a deep breath, then another. She was running out of energy again. She wanted nothing more than to go back to her hotel room and sleep for the rest of the day. Her job was demanding enough at the best of times. Having a multiple sclerosis flare-up in the middle of a crisis would put her in the hospital if she didn't take care of herself. For lightning child's sake, don't give him any ideas about who the spy is. What have you got from her so far? A woman in the uniform of a transport police lieutenant stood up. I can fetch the latest updated transcript, sir.
Do that.
Jackson's dismissal was abrupt.
She's from their Department of Homeland Security, and we're certain she's a world walker. They trained her as a spy and kept her in a padded cell, so she doesn't know much about her operational context, but
that makes her our responsibility for sure. Take me up to see her. The lieutenant came bustling back, clutching a manila folder of printouts. Jackson took it and passed it to Olga without a word.
Right away.
In the elevator, alone with the commander and her attendant, Olga looked at him appreciatively. You've done well, Richard. And so has Inspector Morgan.
We only just caught her by the skin of our teeth. We're not out of the woods yet.
Of course not. But if you got me half an hour's lead over Pierpoint... They rolled out into a corridor. Olga had no problem identifying the interview room. Two cops armed with short-barreled shotguns stood guard outside it. They came to attention as Commander Jackson approached. Olga glanced down at the briefing papers. Name, Rita Douglas. Age, 26. Race, mixed Hindustani. Height, 5'4". Oh dear, she thought dismally. The age and ethnicity added another decimal place to the probability they'd placed on her identity. If the speculation about the Americans having worked out how to activate world-walking in recessive carriers was true, then it was hard to see who else this woman could be. She barely had time to read another line when the door opened. She closed the folder hastily as Jack lined her wheelchair up with the doorframe and pushed her through.
Good morning, Inspector, Miss Douglas. I'm sorry to interrupt your little chat, but you're both coming with me.
And who are... Oh. Alice Morgan half rose, then abruptly came to attention when she saw the commander behind Olga's wheelchair.
Sir.
Who? The prisoner looked confused.
What's going on?
Olga looked at the prisoner. There was a family resemblance, if you were looking for it. She steeled herself.
I'm from the Department of Parahistorical Research, Security Directorate. Commander?
Jackson knew his role.
National Security, he said stiffly, nodding apologetically at Inspector Morgan. Miss Thorold here is taking over the investigation. You will accompany her and the prisoner.
The prisoner flinched visibly. Inspector Morgan was also clearly startled.
What, right now? But we've got another 6 days.
You've got until the party secretariat gets a judge to rubber stamp an emergency decree that will doubtless be a massive case of bureaucratic overreach, then rushes it round here with a goon squad for backup.
The commander gestured at Olga.
Miss Thorold is from the DPR. She'll keep the secretariat off our back. That's right, isn't it?
Olga stared at the prisoner. She was pretty, in the gamine mode that was popular in the United States. skin that could pass for a deep tan, shoulder-length black hair, eyes like a frightened rabbit's.
"You showed up at a very bad time," Olga told the woman.
She flinched as Olga continued.
"I'm here to get you to a place of safety. Then I will have a message for you to take to your handlers. Are you going to cooperate?"
The prisoner nodded, visibly subdued.
"Okay, hood her and cuff her, then bring her along. To the car, Jack. There's no time to lose.